Welcome to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars, where we unravel the stories behind some of pop's most unlikely hits.
From simple curiosities to songs that changed the world, we examine the socio-political and cultural factors that contributed to the success of these surprising outliers.
And the impact these songs had on society. I'm Tom Thompson.
And I'm Tyler Ralston. And together we're
TNT.
Well, that sounded nice. A beer.
It's called the Ashton Amber Ale.
Okay.
Delicious. Local.
All right. Sounds good.
How are you? You look like you've just been cycling in the Swiss Alps or something.
Well, in my mind, I have. You know, I'm always doing these incredible things in my mind. You should see it, man. What goes on in my mind? Just sometimes reality doesn't always match up with it.
What's the temp in Kentucky today? Oh, you're in Maryland.
I'm in Maryland today. Yeah,
right.
It's been unseasonably warm here, honestly.
Here too, but that means a different thing. It's about 4 degrees here today.
Okay, yeah, I think we're going to nosedive. It's been just like, you ever see the movie The Hours?
Yes.
It's been like that. You just fogged in as tight a fog as you can get for 3 days. Today
okay.
It's not.
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of fog too. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty far out. Oh, and here's a tidbit for you. Christmas Eve morning, at pre-dawn, I'm there sipping my tea. In my flip-flops, in my bathrobe or whatever, and just there must have been, 100 fire engines go by. So needless to say, I go outside, 5 doors up, house is burning, flames higher than the building.
No.
I mean, higher than the neighboring houses. Couldn't believe it. And it turns out a woman died in the fire.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Okay, but this is the reason I just bring up this morbidity just to start with. It's a, cautionary tale. She called the fire department and told them, hey, there's a fire in front of my house. And presumably, I don't want to pass judgment here, but she could have gotten out right then and there. Probably, what we would all do in those, or at least think about doing in those circumstances. She was looking for the cat. Gathering up valuables or whatever.
Yeah.
But people forget you got about a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the smoke and it's horrible.
So just get out.
Yeah.
So that was Christmas Eve morning. I mean,
it's chilling.
Yeah. It's a reminder. I remember nothing, obviously nothing happened to me, but I remember all my petty concerns just dealing with just being there were gone.
Yeah.
A moment of intensity, even though for people neighboring or the woman, of course, it's a different world of intensity, but good God.
Yeah. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Nothing quite so dramatic has happened over my Christmas holidays.
That's good.
I had a whole bunch of shows. I had a bunch of shows like every weekend leading up to Christmas, including one with my old pal, Jim Bryson.
I remember the Jim Bryson days.
Yeah, it was kind of a reunion for us. We realized we hadn't played together in, I think, 20 years.
Yeah, right. Great. Good turnout and all that.
Yeah, it was sold out. It was amazing.
Hey, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I did. It was kind of interesting because I did my solo ambient instrumental thing as an opener. And then I played with Jim about through half of the set kind of thing.
So you did Chime of Wren stuff, and then at some point you just came out and started jamming.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. In other news, let's see. I was making my signature cream of mushroom soup for my family, and I almost cut my thumb off.
Oh, God.
So, you know, everyone was raving about how good the creamy mushroom soup was. It's possibly because there was a little extra flavor from a piece of my thumb.
Okay.
We're not sure.
A little protein. Yeah, it's like, you know, now we're getting into, you know, Silence of the Lambs type stuff.
maybe we should give a little shout out to our cannibalism episode.
Oh, yeah, poor Timothy. Yeah, our least listened to episode of all time. So, listeners out there, give Timothy a chance. It was a good episode.
Give him a chance. Yeah. It's a great episode. It's very interesting. Man, they really didn't like, they don't like Timothy. It's weird.
No, it's just such an obscure song. I get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there has to be a least listened to podcast. Unlike frickin' Peace on Earth, Little Drummer Boy from last year, which went through the roof.
Yeah.
Starting in November.
Yeah. Quite astounding. And it's so fun when you have no idea why this is happening.
Yeah. I mean, people dig Christmas. I mean, the holidays or something. It just, yeah, something took off. And of course, the Pogues episode's doing just fine, but that one just went, you know, came on like gangbusters.
Yeah. I think someone must have shared it or something or put it on a playlist or something like that.
Right. Yeah. We don't quite know the ins and outs of how all this works yet. I mean, I've never witnessed how that works personally. So anyway, that's fine. I'm not asking too many questions there.
Yeah. We don't ask questions about that kind of success.
Yeah.
We're good.
We just sit back and rest on our laurels at that point. Okay.
And yet here we are back at it.
Yeah. It's an addiction, man. I'm telling you. Okay.
All right.
I want to ask you a question. No, not quite. Let's take this a little further. Just want to ask you a question. And okay. During, you know, once the internet became a thing, I mean, it's been a thing for, you know, 25 years when it's just all ever present, you know, omnipresent. Okay.
Yeah.
And of course it existed long before that. I mean, it existed back to the 1960s, military development, US, that kind of thing. But by, you know, by the early, late 90s, early 2000s, it's everywhere. And it's a part of daily life. Did you ever, and I bet you did, use the internet to find a song that maybe you remember a line or two from that you'd never heard again, and then track it down that way? I mean,
absolutely.
Okay. Do you remember any of them off the top of your head?
No, but I often hear songs and I don't know anything about them, and I literally just put in like four words and it immediately finds the song I'm looking for.
Right.
Which is great.
Nowadays it's a piece of cake. I mean, I can remember recently, you know, sitting in a cafe and then, you know, this song is awesome. Listen to a couple words, try to understand them over the din of the cafe. And I'm like, everyone just shut up for a second. But then my friend Mark informed me, oh, just get the Shazam app. It automatically does it. Apparently I didn't realize that there's an app out there that'll catch a clip of a song and then find it for you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so yeah, everybody does that and it's a good way to find music. And I'm just remembering, I guess the first time this happened, the first time I did this, thinking way back to the early days of YouTube, I just remember a song that my sister and I heard once when we were little kids, maybe, you know, 9 and 7, something like that. We were in our old Volkswagen van and, you know, had the AM radio on because that's all that was in there. And then we hear, I'm the operator with the pocket calculator.
I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
And at that age, it's the funniest thing of all time.
Yep,
you know the song?
You know what? I know the line, but I can't remember what the song is.
Oh, well, it's operator with the pocket calculator.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Just so you know.
by who?
Okay. Well, that's just it. Okay. So, you know, this around 2007 or something, I'm on YouTube. I hadn't been on it that long. This is the golden age of YouTube.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, oh yeah, just bored. And it's like, type in the lyrics, Kraftwerk.
Oh yes.
Okay. Now, granted, Kraftwerk has come a long way since Operator with the Pocket Calculator. I mean, it sounds like a Commodore 64 or an Atari Pong game playing or something. But it's just like the internet was an avenue to find songs. And I mean, I remember another one pre-YouTube, which took me forever to find. Again, heard it once. Someone made my dad a party tape from the radio recorded in Spain. Okay.
Okay.
And so this song comes on, and then I hear, "Everybody knows that our cities were built to be destroyed."
Everybody knows that our cities were built to be destroyed. Everybody knows that our cities were built to be destroyed. You get annoyed, you buy a flat, you hide behind the mat.
But I know. And the song goes on, it's like 8 minutes, and at the end the guy's just screaming all the, and it's an incredible song. Mm-hmm. Never heard it, never had the slightest clue who sang it. And then, you know, early 2000s, I start to do some searches, and I eventually found it, and it wasn't Spanish at all. It was in English. It wasn't a Spanish singer at all. It was Caetano Veloso, a Brazilian.
Okay.
And when I realized what I'd found, I was living in Brazil at the time, incredibly, went down to the record store, grabbed what I thought was the song, and there it was. So tracked it down. I couldn't have been happier. Okay. But all this is bringing me to a point here. And I mentioned the golden age of YouTube. Okay.
Okay.
So how I calculate the golden age, it's that sweet spot, that golden moment when there's a ton of content on it and it hadn't been taken over by commercials. Okay.
Right. And also, hadn't been monitored so closely by a million agencies taking videos down, etc.
Precisely. Copyrighted material, it was all there. Violence, it was all there. Unpopular political rhetoric, it was all there. You can argue that some of these things should not be publicly viewed. I mean, again, all those things you could make a big argument about. But at least for this moment, it's all there. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, everyone's, watching YouTube, listening to songs on YouTube, but yet it hadn't been, as you just said, it hadn't been heavily monitored. It hadn't been monetized so heavily. It hadn't been commercialized. Not true. There were ads, but you X'd them out or you ignored them or whatever. It was not an obstruction.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it's also the era of, the funny video. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, I'll go ahead and play our song. You know this, don't you?
I'm not sure.
Oh my God. Where have you been?
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. I feel like you introduced me to this.
I probably did.
As I seem to recall, there was a great video to accompany this.
The video is crucial for this.
Okay.
You frightened me there for a second, Tom, by not recognizing that in like 2 seconds.
To be honest with you, Ty, I don't think I had heard that or before or since you played that for me.
Okay, obviously didn't have the biggest of impacts on you.
No.
But that's not to say it didn't have an impact. That was quickly one of the era, not now, but of the era, it was one of the biggest YouTube hits. It's something like 50 million hits or 50 million views. Now, today that's not much. Okay, it's measured in the billions. Mm-hmm. But then 100 million would have been huge. Not the biggest, but getting pretty big. Just for example, there's sort of three main YouTube channels that have this song, the original, a couple others. The 10 hours of continuous Trololo has 7 million hits. Where they set this up seven hours in a row. All right, I'll just pause and just say some people need to get effing lives.
That's so bizarre.
Well, that's just it. This whole internet era is so bizarre.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and this song is just a perfect example of that. Now, I mean, granted, I think it got big because it was the video. You had to see the video where, I mean, it's so weird. For though, I mean, most people have probably seen it, but for those that haven't, it's various descriptions of, you know, this bizarre set that's sort of like brown and green, and then suddenly this guy walks out. I've heard it various described as, you know, an embalmed singing corpse. Okay, just suddenly emerges on ho 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 ho. And so it's people send that around, and you know, you got to see this video, and it was one of those ones that just exploded. Okay.
And where does it originate?
Okay, let's talk a little about the song.
Yeah.
Okay. You're
chomping at the bit here.
Yeah, I can see it. the performer is named Edward Hill. That's K-H-I-L. He was born in the former Soviet Union. Okay. Edward, it pronounced Hill, and his name is interesting. It's not a typical Russian name. It is a evolution of the Spanish name Gil, G-I-L, which is fascinating. Okay, so I put, you know, using just my historical knowledge, this is my theory. He didn't know where it came from, other than it came from a Spanish surname. Could have been any number of things. But my guess, it was this. He's the descendant of Spanish Jews expelled in 1492 from Spain. And my guess is many of those expelled Jews went to the Ottoman Empire and then perhaps settled on some fringe of what becomes Russia. And you get the idea.
Right.
Again, a lot of English or Dutch or whatever with a Spanish surname, it's a good chance that they are descendant of some of those people. Economist David Ricardo is one of them, just for example.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At any rate, that was just something that was curious. But former Soviet Union, born in 1934, and he got his start. Okay, for, you know, a very interesting life in a lot of ways. Obviously, he survived World War II, but barely. His kindergarten was bombed or was hit in a bombing run, separated from his mother for years at a very young age, but survived. And his first stint as a performer was singing for wounded Soviet soldiers in a military hospital. Went on, eventually did other things, became like a professional printer, but eventually joined the Leningrad Conservatory and developed his obviously very rich baritone voice. Okay. And became basically the Soviet equivalent of a pop star. Okay.
Wow.
And yeah. And so he's big, but you know, it's a Soviet, his career is supported, propped up, however you want to look at it, by the Soviet Union. So he's, you know, creative license was limited, let's just say. Mm-hmm. And this song is an example of that. Okay, let's talk about the song a little bit. The song itself was written in 1966, okay, by a guy named RKD Orostrovsky or something like that, okay? Hmm. And he was friends with Hill. And so he wrote the song. And the song is called, this is obviously a literal translation because it's horrid, but it's I'm So Glad As I Am Finally Returning Home. Okay, they could have come up with a better title, but I think that's a very literal translation.
Right.
I Am So Glad As I Am Finally Returning Home. And the original song had lyrics, okay? It was about an American cowboy returning from the prairie to his farm in where?
Kentucky.
You got it. Okay. Returning to his farm in Kentucky. How about that?
Amazing.
So whenever Hill and Orostrovsky got together and was like, let's do a version of this, 10 years later, 1976, Hill really liked the song. And they both, all right, let's do this. And then at the last minute got cold feet. It's like, wait a minute, we can't sing this. The censors are going to send us to, you know, the freaking gulag.
Yeah.
It's too American. So at the last second, it's like, well, let's just vocalize it without, you know, non-lexical vocalization.
Okay.
And that's what happened. Okay.
Interesting.
So they did that ridiculous video. And the lip syncing's horrible. I mean, they spent all of an afternoon on it. And just like videos of that era were done, you know, they spent an afternoon on it. And they had some pre-made set that, okay, you come out here and sing like a, you know, an embalmed corpse and point and laugh at the appropriate times. And then the song came and went. Okay. Come 2009, the video is posted on YouTube.
Mm.
And it's by some unknown person in presumably Russia, somewhere in the former Soviet Union. Eventually, someone stumbles onto it, is like, oh my God, this is outrageous. And it quickly found its way to the Stephen Colbert Show.
Oh,
and from there you go. And from there it went viral, you know, 50 right. million hits in no time flat.
You know, it's funny, Ty, in Canada, we say Stephen Colbert.
Oh, okay. In America, we say Stephen Colbert. So there.
You also say Detroit instead of Detroit.
Detroit. How about we'll just call it the Strait? Is that okay with you? We'll get rid of all French references there.
Okay, sure.
Detroit.
Get it right or change it.
Yeah. So you guys get it right. It's Detroit. All right. Let's get it straight. And it's Stephen Colbert.
All right.
Colbert. Jeez.
Maybe I'm making that up. I feel like that's how we say it.
It wouldn't surprise me at all, considering that if it's not a French name itself, it certainly lends itself to French pronunciation.
Yeah. It probably is.
Yeah.
Stéphane.
Yeah. So why don't you say Stéphane Colbert?
Maybe I will.
You guys are just being pretentious by, oh, the Colbert. The Colbert. But it's Stephen Colbert. All right, y'all.
We are looking at how to pronounce the name of this American comedian, writer, producer, political commentator, actor, and television host of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Stephen Colbert. In French, because this is a name of French origin, his name would be said as Colbert. Colbert, but in English, Stephen Colbert.
We digress,
but that's okay. We need to get this out of our system sometimes. But anyway, so there it was. It was one of these. This is the perfect example of the golden age of YouTube. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it became this massive hit. But here's the kicker. Never charted anywhere. Okay.
Mm.
Not surprising at all.
Well, you're cheating. You're cheating then.
Oh no. Oh no. Hey, let's get a little philosophical here then. Does a song need to chart in order to be a hit?
Mm.
Oh, great one. Enlighten us with your sage words of wisdom.
Well, Ty, technically speaking, yes, but I'll let you get away with this this time.
Okay, do elaborate.
No, I think it's fair.
Okay, yeah, but I think we're both right here, because listen to this. The song became, you know, this worldwide phenomenon in 2009, 2010 in there. And in 2013, okay, just a few years later, Billboard will start to include YouTube views into the charts.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that.
Yes, because, okay, if you look at the top, and just for example, a song I've never heard, but something called Harlem Shuffle, with the second YouTube did that, the second Billboard did that, that song went from number nothing to number one.
Harlem Shuffle, who did that?
I think that's what it's called. I don't even know. It's one of these things. I just, you know, it's a song I just happen to read. I don't know the song.
I feel like, wasn't there a Rolling Stone song?
Maybe I'm getting the name wrong, but okay, it's something to do with Harlem. They do the Harlem shake. Okay, but fast forward, okay, to 2023. If you look at the top 20 most viewed YouTube, you know, videos, okay, mm-hmm. You're gonna find Ed Sheeran's, like, he's got three.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
That are the top viewed. So, you know, perhaps, you know, are the fans listening? Are the fans viewing? Did I say his name right? Ed Sheeran.
You said you almost made it like almost French.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I spooked you. Now you're trying to make everything French.
Oui, oui.
You were like Sheeran or something.
I got confused for a second. I've heard a couple seconds of that guy's music and I turned it right off. Okay.
I'm not a fan either. I really don't get it.
Yeah. But that's just it. Anything in the top 20 viewed things is going to be basically, as the word I like to use, is beige or vanilla. Okay. At best. So anyway, he's got three in there. So his fans either are listening or viewing or both. So, because he's had number one hits. So there you go. Most things, curiously enough, most viewed things in that top 20 are kids' songs.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I've seen so many of them because I have a kid who's now six, but as he was really little, you know, we would just look for stuff that he would tune into, like the Baby Shark Dance. I mean, most of the stuff's painful to watch. Coco Melon stuff, just pure crap. Masha and the Bear, a partial exception because of the cool graphics of, you know, nature and fruits and. But the problem is the Masha character, at least in the American English translation, is just so obnoxious as to be unwatchable. Whereas the Portuguese version, which we also watched because my wife is Brazilian, is much better. So that goes to show what a good overdub versus or different interpretations of overdub can do. But it's all basically music, okay? But that was backing up to this one, this was the beginning of that age where you listened to YouTube.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't just easily access, I mean, Apple Music is in Spotify and those other things have long since made it, you can access whatever you want, whenever you want, but not then.
It's a good point, Ty, because I feel like in a way that whole thing about the way the algorithms work, you know, like they suggest something next. I almost feel like that started with YouTube. Well, actually, that's not true. You know, there was a service, I don't remember. It was like Yahoo or something, and they had a thing. It was very rudimentary, but they had a thing where you'd put in some songs or a song you liked, and then it would start suggesting, you know, things based on what other listeners liked or whatever.
I think that was Spotify in its early days.
No, there was something pre-Spotify.
Okay,
I think it was like Yahoo or something.
Yahoo Music.
Okay. We'll have to look. Yeah, something like that. Like Yahoo. It was like, yeah, it didn't last long, but I do remember thinking it was really cool at the time that you could put in something, you know, like, oh, put in Bauhaus and then they'll give you, I don't know, like The Cure or something.
Bauhaus-esque suggestion. Music.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'm remembering the same thing, but maybe not remembering the title of the service. Yeah. But you type in the name of a song, you wouldn't get that song, but you get other stuff that was similar.
I think it's different things. You could type in a song and the song would come up, but then if you just let it go, it would choose things that were similar, whatever the service was. Maybe one of our listeners will remember.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But I don't know. I mean, later YouTube definitely did that and they still do it. Yeah. And I found some great music that way.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff I never would have heard. So how's that for weird?
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird.
Yeah, like I remember I ended up on this down this rabbit hole of African rock music.
Cool.
Okay. Like, and it's really pretty cool. Like, there's a band called Witch from Namibia.
Oh, yeah.
You ever heard of Witch?
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah. It's an acronym for We Intend to Cause Havoc.
That comes now.
Amazing. You know, just a slight aside, when I was in Peterborough visiting my parents, I went to this cool record store there, Blue Streak Records, and I bought this record just on based on how it looks. And it's like modular synths by this guy from Uganda. And apparently when I brought it up to the cache, they were super excited because they were like,
been there for 25 years.
This is amazing. No. They've actually been selling tons of them, but apparently it's really neat because it's modular synths with beats and stuff. But actually it manages to get like the polyrhythm stuff of African music. It almost sounds like organic, like African beats and stuff. I'm gonna listen to it after this session.
That is cool. So you actually bought something based on the pretty cover?
I did, and then I searched it a little bit, and then it sounded intriguing, so I just bought it.
Okay, on the fly, you searched it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, hence the nature of our technological society.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's some great African stuff out there. Like, Francis Bebe is one of my favorites. You ever hear him?
No.
Oh, he's incredible.
They believe we are wild men, they believe we are wild, just because we don't use any money and we drink no coffee cola.
And I remember, and you know, this was maybe what you consider the golden age of YouTube as well, but I think I remember at a time that it was like the, after Google, it was like the most used search, like people, you know what I mean? People were searching in YouTube only second to Google. Out of all the search engines and stuff, like people were just like randomly looking for things in YouTube, like, as you say, maybe for music and all kinds of things, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. Like entertainment is the biggest search stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Backing up a bit, we'll randomly put the golden age of YouTube at about 2007 ish, you know, give or take, back up to about 97 when the internet, the information superhighway, the AOL days and all that kind of stuff. At that point, porn, half of all searches were for porn. That half. Okay. Let's just talk about the evolution of the streaming video pioneered by porn to get it faster, to get it on screen faster, because it's so much memory, which of course will eventually do the porn industry in. So their way to make it rich quick, it's like, it, then, you know, 20 years later, it's done because there's all this content for free. It's so bizarre.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. That whole, I mean, all this, the free stuff. And I heard an interview with Eric Clapton fairly recently, another one who's, you know, this multi-gazillionaire griping about entitlement for people that want free stuff. And I get we've had this discussion before. Who was the guy that was so annoying? That
Don Henley.
Yeah, it was Don Henley.
Don Henley and Eric Clapton. I'd put them in the same category of douche.
Put them in the same douche pot. Yeah, it's hard for me to take seriously. You know, probably, you know, halfway to being billionaires, getting bitchy about that just drives me crazy.
And unless they're doing it, you know, to support artists who don't have money, you know, I mean, like struggling artists, which I don't think they are.
No, they're not. No, those 68 guys working for Don Henley are not out there for the indie guys. Okay. Make sure no one's downloading their stuff. Yeah. But Clapton, he may say this entitlement attitude. No, I don't disagree with the whole entitlement thing for, you know, young people these days, but I think they all miss the point. If it's available, you are going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get something for free and it's so easy to access, of course you are going to take it.
Yeah.
And that was YouTube at that time. In that era, if you didn't want to go buy a whole album or I couldn't get it, I would listen to it on YouTube. I wouldn't watch the video. I'd hit play and then go about my business, dance around the room, whatever, air guitar, whatever I was doing at the time. To the point, I think the sound in that era, it was not that good on YouTube. It's probably better now, but it developed. It's what I refer to as the YouTube headache. If I listen to too much music from YouTube, it would give me a weird headache.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny too, because I don't, you know, I'm not totally clear on all the details of this, but even MP3s initially were not meant for music at all. They're actually, it's like a pretty poor algorithm.
Right now, it's probably the most common.
Yeah, M4As are much better, but.
Right, and at a glance, you can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
Unless you got really good sound equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then of course, there are the creative folk that make their own videos with copyrighted music.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's I'll put it. Here's one incident again, also from the era of the golden age of YouTube. Don't Fear the Reaper by the Blue Oyster Cult. Everybody knows it. Okay.
Yeah.
If it's not Stairway to Heaven, that's your first song on the guitar, at least for a certain era. So anyway, I don't care for the song all that much, by the way. But I watched, this was outrageous, but it worked. Somebody took footage from the Jonestown Massacre and set it to that song.
Ooh.
And it worked. It was effective. It drove it home somehow.
Okay.
And the lyrics are, you know, vaguely, you know, related. I'll never listen to that song again without remembering that.
I think one of the coolest things that came out of all this was the mashups people were doing. You know, they would put together two sort of pretty disparate songs into one amazing composition of that. I think I commend that. I think it's really fun. You know, it's something like, I don't know, you know, Metallica and Michael Jackson or something. You know, I can't think of, or like, I remember there was some really cool ones with Stevie Wonder and maybe Metallica or someone like that, but those are pretty fun.
Very superstitious. Writings on the wall. Very superstitious. Letters about to fall.
Here's another thing of the golden age of YouTube. It's also the era of the funny, wacky video. Mm-hmm. That gets circulated widely.
Right.
I'm thinking back to that era. Of course, Double Complete Rainbow. Remember that one?
Yeah, of course.
A guy who's probably tripping sees a double complete rainbow.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's being generous.
It just loses it.
Oh, my God. It's full on. Double rainbow all the way across the sky. Oh, my God. Oh my God. Oh God.
It brings tears to your eyes. It's genuinely pretty funny. Mm-hmm. And of course, on a more sinister note, but it ended up being hysterical, was the bedroom intruder bit, where that guy's telling the guy who came into his sister's room, we're going to find you. We're going to try, you know. You know the one I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, you do. You had to have seen that because it was one of the biggest things of that era.
Warning to whoever is responsible.
You don't have to come and confess that you did. We're looking for you. We gonna find you. I'm letting you know now so you can run and tell that, homeboy.
But okay, on that note, a couple of kids took that guy ranting on the newscast, put it to rap music, and it was the number one watched video. Like, you know, 100 million hits or something that year. These are like a couple of 10-year-old kids did that.
We're looking for you. We gon' find you. We gon' find you. So you can run and tell that. Run and tell that. Run and tell that. Homeboy. Homeboy.
We got your t-shirt to the left fingerprints. And now you are so dumb. You are really dumb.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, like, for a brief moment, there was this wide open realm of possibilities.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's all pretty closed up now.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, because I use YouTube a lot for, I use it for so many things. It's so good. Like if you need to fix something.
Okay. You know,
I love the generosity of people that are just like, hey, here's how you, you know, like stupid things like how do you get your key fob open when your battery dies for your car? You know, and like someone's like, oh, here's a video. It's like super, you slide a credit card along this thing and then you do this. I'm like, thank you, because otherwise I would have frozen in the cold because I couldn't get into my car.
I can see them finding Tom's frozen body like in The Shining, holding credit card, icicles dripping from beard.
But then also like reviews. I think reviews are, I love that. You know, you're like, oh, I'm looking at it for a new guitar amp or something, and be like, oh, and you just type in anything like Vox AC10 versus Vox AC15. And there's 18 videos of varying quality, but there's usually bound to be one that's really good. And you'd be like, oh, okay, that amp's better for me. I love that.
A good friend of mine, he's a deer hunter, and his dad grew up hunting deer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, an expert at in every possible way, killing, cleaning, you know, butchering, etc. He was telling me his dad saw a video of how to get more meat out of this deer, and his dad was flabbergasted. Like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, something he never would, things he never would have considered.
Yeah. That's amazing.
It is. But on the flip side of that, a lot of those, you know, do it yourself, you can fix this yourself things are dangerous. Yeah. I mean, how many people have gotten drunk and watched a you can do it to fix it video and made it a whole lot worse?
It's true. I always think about the amp ones, and the amp people are always very thoughtful about mentioning, like, if you're not an amp technician, you should not be monkeying around inside your amp. There are, even when you turn it off, there are lethal volts that will kill you.
Yeah, there's a good point. You know, YouTube video playing and they find the guy's jittering body next to his, you know, finger sticking in the amp. To the point, I think people worried about getting sued. Like, for example, I remember there's a song called Cavatina. It's Stanley Ross. Can't think. It's a modern classical song. You've heard it a million times.
Yeah.
I looked it up there was an instructional. Oh, okay. I'll check this out. See what he's up to. And like there's some parts throughout the piece that are, you know, big stretches. You really have to, you know, work. I mean, it hurts, you know, until you really master it.
Yeah.
And the guy kept warning people, like, do not attempt this if it, like, I think he was really worried someone was going to sue him because they would, you know, they're
sprain their hand.
Yeah. Their tendon would get sore or something.
That's really funny.
And I can already feel pressure by playing it so slowly and having to maintain so much pressure for such an elongated period of time. If you feel the same, do not worry about it. Just take a brief break, pause the video, walk around for a little bit, get a cup of tea, and then come back and practice these. I found that with this piece, with Cavatina, you really have...
You did a nice interpretation of Cavatina, have to admit.
Yeah, he's maybe gone a little too far.
Right, or just, you know, people, you know, nervous. Yeah, I mean, when you throw stuff out on the internet, you know, God, I mean, we worry about this ourselves. God knows how it's going to be used against us someday. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Or, yeah, that's, yeah, so we, you know, we filter ourselves beautifully, don't we, Tom?
Indeed.
Yeah. Oh, let me talk a little more about the song. There's just a couple more little tidbits, important ones, in fact. After the Soviet Union fell, he was out of work.
Okay.
And he ended up singing for nickels and dimes in a restaurant in Paris that was Russia themed. Okay.
Okay.
Like, oh, look at its old pop star heel. He's doing his thing.
Okay.
But he eventually moves back to Russia, and, you know, 2009 rolls around. His grandson comes in, Grandpa, you're world famous. Everyone's singing your song. And of course he's like, he thought someone was playing a joke on him.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, according to his son, Heal had no idea what the internet really was. He'd heard of it.
Okay.
So he just had no clue, but it revived his career.
Oh, good.
He was, within a year, he's singing to packed houses, people wanting to hear Trololo. And he's like, where was all this 35 years ago? You know, they didn't realize it, but they launched, you know, a song to Mars, and it comes back 35 years to become a worldwide hit, a one-off song that he did at some point in his career.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's like Searching for Sugar Man. I'm sure you know that whole story.
Yeah. Sixto Rodriguez, who just passed away, by the way.
Oh, he did.
Yep, sadly. He was a struggling, I mean, I'm a fan. I think he was great. Mm-hmm. But he was, you know, he's a struggling performer, and little does he know, he's the biggest thing ever in South Africa. He had no idea for years. And a colleague of mine is from South Africa, and I asked him about Rodriguez. He called himself Rodriguez. And he said it was an important part of my upbringing. You couldn't overstate what a big figure it was.
For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colors to my dreams? Silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane.
Like, I feel like that's the kind of thing that, because of the internet now, couldn't really happen. Like, it's going to get back to the person sooner than it used to, where they're like hugely popular somewhere and have no idea. I doubt that could happen these days.
Yeah, it's so strange. And then nostalgia is this just big part of all of this, which is the biggest irony of all. Like this Trololo Man was, there's something nostalgic about the bizarreness of the Soviet Union and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. 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 It all plays together.
Yeah. In a strange sort of way. So any final words?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll just launch this one into space, and in 30 years, it'll be the biggest podcast of all time. How about that?
Thanks for tuning in to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars. We hope you enjoyed yourself and learned a few things along the way.
For a complete list of songs you heard in this episode, visit us at hsfm.buzzsprout.com. We hope you'll support the artists we featured by purchasing their music.
If you liked this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and you'll receive new episodes as soon as they become available. While you're at it, if you could give us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts, that would really help us out. We would like to thank The Reverb Syndicate for providing the theme song for our podcast. They have an extensive catalog of tunes just as rockin' as the one you hear here.
Here, here.
You can find them at thereverbsyndicate.ca and on Facebook, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp, which typically pays artists the most. We would also like to thank Eric Minot for designing our podcast icon. You can find his design and illustration work on Instagram at MinoGraphics. That's MinoGraphx. You can connect with us on Instagram at TNTS, Hit Songs from Mars.
Feel free to disagree, praise, correct, and chastise us.
We would also love to hear your idea of a hit song from Mars and why you think it fits the mold. Even better, if you felt like recording a voice memo and sending it our way, you can email us at hitsongsfrommars@gmail.com. We may even feature it on the show. Until next time, Earthlings.